ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 7, What Prahlad Learned in the Womb, Text Number 26.
Abis Trivarnai.
Are we on the right one? It's correct? They wrote 27. Oh dear. But it's 26. So what should we do? Just read this one. Okay. Sorry, they put the wrong one on the board.
Abis trivane paryastir buddhi bedhai kriyo bhavai swarupam atmano bhuyed gandhar vayam ivan vayat.
Does anybody have a book? Not really. Anyway, I think we just do translation. Huh? I'm not sure what to do now. Okay, word for words. Oh, do you want to just do in Hindi? Then just. They'll follow. Okay.
Abis trivarne paryastir buddhi badai kriyod bhavai Svarupam atmano bhuyet Gandhar vayam ivan vayat Abis trivarnai paryaster Buddhi bhedhai kriyod bhavai Svarupam atmano bhuyet Gandhar vayam ivan vayat Abis trivane paryastir Buddhi bhuidhai kriyod bhavai Svarupam atmano bhuyet Gandhar vayam ivan vayat. divide kriyodavai sarupam atmano bujed kandher vayam ivan vayat evi arsher budi vede kriyodavai sarupam atmano bujed kandher vayam ivan vayat.
Matajis.
Ebi srivainar paryaste budi vedai kriyod bhavai sarupam atmano bujed kandher vayam ivan vayat.
Ebi, by these, Trivarnai, composed of the three modes of nature, Paryastai, completely rejected due to not touching the living force, Buddhi, of intelligence, Vedhai, the differentiations. Kriya Udbhavai, produced from different activities. Swarupam, the constitutional position. Atmanha, of the self. Budhyat, one should understand. Gandhai, by the aromas. Vayum, the air. Eva, exactly like. Anvayat, from close connection. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. As one can understand the presence of the air by the aromas it carries, so, under the guidance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can understand the living soul by these three divisions of intelligence. These three divisions, however, are not the soul. They are constituted of the three modes and are born of activities. Please repeat. As one can understand the presence of the air by the aromas it carries, so under the guidance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can understand the living soul by these three divisions of intelligence. These three divisions, however, are not the soul. They are constituted of the three modes and are born of activities. Purport. As already explained, there are three states to our existence, namely wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. In all three states, we have different experiences. Thus, the soul is the observer of these three states. Actually, the activities of the body are not the activities of the soul. The soul is different from the body. Just as aromas are distinct from the material vehicle in which they are carried, the soul is unattached to material activities. This analysis can be considered by a person who is fully under the shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. This is confirmed by the Vedic injunction, Yasmin Vijanate Sarvam Evam Vijnantam Bhavanti. If one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can automatically understand everything else. Because of not taking shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, even great scholars, scientists, philosophers, and religionists are always bewildered. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32. Yenye ravindaksha vimukta maninas tvayasta bhavid avishuddha buddhaya. Even though one may artificially think himself liberated from material contamination, if he has not taken shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, his intelligence is polluted, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 3.42. Indriyani paranyahur Indriyani paramana manasatu para buddhir yo buddhe paratastusa. Above the senses is the mind, above the mind is the intelligence, and above the intelligence is the soul. Ultimately, when one's intelligence becomes clear through devotional service, Hare Krishna, one is situated in Buddhi Yoga. This is also explained in Bhagavad Gita, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, Yena Mam Upayanti Te. When devotional service develops and one's intelligence becomes clear, one can use his intelligence to return home back to Godhead. So we were reading yesterday how the soul is perceiving three different states, namely wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. So these three different states are induced upon us when we have a material body. But the soul is above these things and is perceiving them. And here it's a nice example of how air is carrying aromas. So air is the medium or the transporter of the aromas. It's not that the air becomes smelly or dirty or fragrant. The air and the aromas are two different things. They are separate. But still, one can perceive these things through the medium of the air. So when the air is carrying something sweet, we think, oh, that is very nice. And when the air is carrying something foul, then we think, oh, I want to leave that place. Like sometimes we use the example that this material world is like a stool room. Everybody knows that when you go into the stool room, the air is very foul. And you don't want to stay in that place at all. You want to go out from that place very quickly. So this material world is considered to be like that. You want to do your business and get out. Don't hang around. So this analogy of the air carrying the aromas is very appropriate. We want to be able to observe our situation and understand that we are neither wakeful or in dreaming state or even in deep sleep, but we're actually above all of these things. Because the wakeful state is actually another dreaming state. Although it appears very real, it's actually a dream. Just how many people have had a dream within a dream? You go to sleep and then you wake up and then you wake up again finding out that the dream was actually within a dream. Anybody had this experience? A few people? I've had it. It's really kind of interesting. You're asleep, and then you wake up. But then you find out that you wake up again to find that you had a dream within a dream. So, this material life, Prabhupada said that this material life is like one big long dream. At night you have a dream, maybe a few minutes, 5 minutes. You're dreaming that you're being chased by a tiger or that you're a king. We heard from yesterday. You may be very frightened. Even if you're being chased by a tiger, it's so real that when you wake up, your whole body is sweating. It's very real for you at the time. It seems very real. Or you're dreaming that you're in some palatial building and enjoying like anything. And then you wake up and you find, oh, it's all a dream. So this material life is like a long, long dream. 100 years, maybe 100 years, we're believing that I'm an American, I come from California, I like to go to the temple, I play music, I like to read books, I like to go surfing. So many things we're doing within this dream. But it's a dream. And eventually we have to wake up. So just as in material life, when we have some work to do, we set the alarm clock, some sound vibration. How many people use alarm clocks? Yeah, quite a few. So this method of waking up from sleep is appropriate. We wake up to go to work. Sometimes we're dreaming and then we get this ring, 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 ring. And we have to get up. Oh dear, it's time to get up and go to work. We were dreaming such a nice dream. Sometimes my son, I have to wake him for school. And his alarm goes and he doesn't wake up. So I go in and I have to wake him. Sometimes I have to shake him. He doesn't want to wake up. And then he'll become angry. Why did you wake me up? I was having such a cool dream, you know. They're actually enjoying the dreaming state. Right? So we have a nice dream. We don't want to wake up to the reality, oh, I have to go to school. But the devotee, when he dreams, he's actually dreaming of Krishna. Prabhupada said that we should get up in the morning, attend Mangal Arati, chant Hare Krishna, attend Srimad Bhagavatam class, work hard all day for Krishna, come home at the end of the day, go to another Arati, chant Hare Krishna, right? And take some hot milk, and then read Krishna book. Read Krishna book. And he says, if you do this at night, you'll go to sleep and you'll dream of Krishna. How many people have had dreams of Krishna? Huh? Nobody? That means we're not reading enough. We're not focusing enough. Prabhupada said you would dream of Krishna. My son, again, he's over in GEV. He told me a very nice dream he had. We have a small Ladu Gopal deity. He said that he was watching the deity on the altar and all of a sudden he opened his eyes and looked over at him. And then he was looking around the room and like waving at him. And then he looked at the other people and he looked back. And then again, the deity, Krishna, became the deity again. So this is our small Ladu Gopal in our house. But he had a dream that Krishna came to life in the dream. And we also understand from the scriptures that the deity is non-different from Krishna. When we worship the deity, It's the same as if Krishna is here. He is here. It's not different. One time Prabhupada was watching a devotee do some artik. He was waving some incense. He was waving some lamp. He was waving some fan. Prabhupada looked and he said, if he knew what he was doing, he would faint. We have no real realization of who Krishna is. But Krishna is present there in the deity. Krishna is present everywhere. And these are the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. He was explaining that Krishna is present within every living entity. Krishna is in every single living entity as super soul. And not only that, but he's present in every atom. So when his demoniac father was asking, so where is this God? And Prahlad said, he's everywhere, father. And then he challenged, is he in this pillar? And Prahlad said, yes. And then Hiranyakashipu, he didn't believe him, so he broke the pillar with his sword like this. And of course, as we all know, Nrisimhadev emerged. So, Krishna is within every atom. He's within every living entity. And he's also within our heart. Krishna is within our heart. So, we have to be able to perceive that the soul is there. That Krishna is there. I hear it also in this verse. It's explaining how the senses are being controlled by the mind, and the mind is controlled by the intelligence, and above the intelligence is the soul. So this always reminds me of this picture we have in Bhagavad Gita, where you've seen this picture where that horses have like an eye on one horse and an ear on another horse and a nose. You've seen this picture? And the horses are pulling a chariot, and then there's the reins of the chariot, then there's the driver, and then there's the passenger. So the senses are pulling the chariot, and the mind are compared to the reins of the chariot. And the driver, he's compared to the intelligence. And above the intelligence is the soul. So the soul is like the passenger. And above that is Krishna. So we see this hierarchy of direction. So if there's no direction, what happens? The horses, they go crazy. They just run here and there. So this is the condition of the materialist. They are being dragged around by their senses, just as horses. I don't know how many people. Anybody have experience with horses? Not really? A couple of people. Anyway, it's really like that. If you sit on a horse, if you have no experience riding horses, the horse will immediately sense it. And he'll just go wherever he likes. He'll just go this way, go that way. And he knows that you're inexperienced. And sometimes they'll see a tree and they'll run under the tree because they see the branch. They actually want to knock you off. they try to knock you off. You know, they think if they can get away, just get rid of this guy. Then I can run back to the stable and get something to eat, or go down to the river and get something to drink and do what I like. So horses, they're like this. If you don't show them control, they'll immediately try to just get rid of you and they won't listen to you. Like that. They'll do whatever they like. So the senses are like that. The senses are dragging us to and fro. Just like if we're walking down the street and we hear some nice music, then immediately we think, oh, what is that film song? That sounds very nice. And we go over and we listen. Or we see something in the store. Sometimes you'd walk by these stores, very fancy stores. They have beautiful displays. Some jewelry or something like this, or mannequin. They'll have a mannequin. And you think, oh, what is that? And you look over and you see, oh, it's just a mannequin. There's nothing real there. Or we smell some nice food cooking, something, and we're thinking, oh, maybe I should go get that. But then, what happens? The mind thinks, no, 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 hang on a second. Hang on just a second here. And then the intelligence starts to act. Well, better I go back to the temple. Krishna is there. Instead of listening to this film music, I can be listening to some nice kirtan. Prabhu here is singing so nicely. I was enjoying like anything. So the Maha Mantra is there, a beautiful sound vibration. But it's connected with Krishna. It is Krishna's holy name. Krishna and His holy name are non-different. So when we hear some singing with the holy name, then we are connecting with Krishna. When we are hearing some mundane song about the love between some boy and girl, then this sex attraction is brought up. So we want to try to avoid that. And the deities here are so exquisite. I'm so amazed. Just everywhere you walk in this temple, you're reminded of Krishna. Everywhere there's dioramas, or just doing parikrama around the deities, you see all these beautiful paintings. And then you're seeing the artist's name and the description. So just by walking around the temple, everywhere you go, you're reminded of Krishna. You're reminded of Krishna's pastimes. You're reminded of Krishna's devotees. What to speak of the deities themselves, so beautifully dressed, so well taken care of, so willing to give their benediction to all the devotees who come to see them and to serve them. So, to bring the senses under the control of the mind, and then the intelligence, and then ultimately the soul, and even above that, Krishna. So Krishna, He's giving direction how to control the senses. And when we bring the senses under the control and see things as they are, then we can perceive the soul as being Sat Chit and Ananda, full of knowledge, full of bliss, and eternal. Whereas when we're in material consciousness, it's just the opposite. We're always miserable. Isn't it? Always suffering. And everything is temporary and full of ignorance. So we want to get free from this state of ignorance. And how to do this? We do this by engaging in devotional service. Prahlad Maharaj gave so many instructions, but just here he's telling about how people who are addicted to sense gratification and how their target is actually women. So the whole basis of material sense gratification is this sex desire. And when we become under the control of this sex desire, then it is explained that we are like shackled or chained in this material world. This is the shackle, the chain, the thing that binds us to this material world, birth after birth. So he is explaining to his friends, he calls them, oh, sons of demons. But factually, at least in the West, everybody is a demon. Everybody is addicted to sense gratification. Just like when we were growing up, it's explained here that that the demons, they're shackled by this sex desire, and they want their children to also be shackled. They're thinking that this is a good thing. And if you, I grew up in the West, we knew nothing of Krishna. But everything is pointed towards sex desire and towards this ultimate goal. They think that this is the goal, to get married, to have a house, to have a car, to have a nice wife. This is the goal of life. And all the children are pushed in that direction. All the films are about this. Every film you ever saw, what happens at the end, right? The boy and the girl get together and live happily ever after. Isn't it? Every film I ever saw, that's what happens. And then this goes deeply inside the consciousness that this is the goal. Find a beautiful girl, get married, and live happily ever after. But that's not real. It doesn't happen. Even if you find a nice girl, either she'll get sick and die, or you'll get sick and die, or something. It's not going to be happily ever after. So, one is not advised to go down this road. This is foolishness. So, the idea is if we take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only then can we become free from this illusion. It's a grand illusion. And everybody is being fooled. Huh? Prahlad Maharaja says it's like chewing the chewed. This example is very appropriate. How many people have seen some children pick up some old sugar cane and try to get some juice out of it? You've seen? Sometimes you see these kids, they'll pick it up. Or especially the dogs and the monkeys, they'll do. But even the children, they'll pick up sometimes, try to get some juice from the sugar cane. So, there's nothing there. And if there is, it's so little, it's hardly worth endeavoring for. But this material world is like that. We're trying to get some juice out of the material world, but it doesn't really exist. And if there's something there, it's so less that it's certainly not worth bothering about. So we want to get free from this and get free from... Because otherwise we descend down into the darkest material regions. If we pursue this whole boy-girl thing, we get dragged down. We get dragged down further and further and further. So now we have a human form of life. Prahlad Maharaj was instructing his classmates that you have a human form. This is very, very important. Don't waste it. And these kids were saying, come on, Prahlad, we're just children. We want to play. We want to have fun. And he was saying, no. Be careful. Be very, very careful. Otherwise you'll get sucked into this whole thing and you will get dragged down. Maybe next lifetime you won't be so fortunate. Maybe you don't get a human form. So the human form is very important because we have an opportunity to try to understand God, to try to understand why we're here, to try to understand how to get free from the cycle of birth and death. Don't waste your opportunity, he was pleading with his friends. And he told them all, please, if you just chant the names of Hari, you can be liberated, you can be joyful in this very life. Just sing and dance. Chant the name of Hari and you'll be free from all material sufferings. So he was instructing his friends like this. And of course, then when the teachers found out about this, when Hiranyakashipu found out about this, he was very, very angry. Because yes, he was a heavy, heavy materialist. Hiranyakashipu was a big, 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 big demon. Prabhupada used to say, demon. He was the heaviest of all the demons. It said that the austerity that he underwent, nobody had ever done in the past, and nobody will ever do in the future. His austerity was so great. And he was so powerful that the demigods were afraid of him. Even when he rose one eyebrow, people would run away in fear. Such a powerful demon. The demigods. Demigods are powerful, not like us. But they would all run away because he was so powerful. So just imagine your father is like that. And you're preaching to your school friends, knowing very, very well that the father is not going to be happy about this. But you do it anyway. So how is it possible that Prahlad was able to be so fearless? Because he had taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is where our real strength lies. When we take shelter of Krishna, then Krishna will protect us. Right? Sarvadharma parichaja mamikam sharam vrsha. So when we take shelter of Krishna, we have nothing to fear. And Prahlad was such a good example of this. His father, just imagine, we have so many problems, but just imagine being trampled by an elephant. What would you do? Think about it. What would you do if somebody threw you into a big pit of snakes? How would you react? What would you do? Does anybody have a near-death experience? Anybody? Come on, you must have been... Come on, just driving in Mumbai is a near-death experience. Trying to cross the road. Maybe you just don't realize. No, but nobody's really had... Nobody's been so sick that you've been almost close to dying. I had a near-death experience. Do you want to hear about it? No? One time I was on Sankirtan. I was distributing some incense. And my friend Dhruva, he was selling some cookies. He had a table. And it was full of cookies. So he was going to push it onto the mall. It had some wheels. So he was rolling it onto the marketplace. And some man saw that he was dressed in saffron dressed, shaved head, and going to sell some prasadam. He stood in front of him and he said, "You can't do that here." And my friend said, "Yes, we can. We have our permit. Everything is okay." So then the man pushed the cart and it bumped into my friend. So my friend, he pushed the cart back and said, "Yes, we can do this here." So then the man came out from behind the cart and he came and he pushed my friend on the chest. "You can't do that here." So then I was sitting, I was watching. And I stood up, I said, "Hey, don't be pushing my friend." And he looked at me and he said, "I know how to take care of you punks." And he pulled out a gun. He pointed it at me and he shot. Boom! And then we... And then again... Two times. The first bullet, I don't know what happened. I thought the second bullet... I thought he... You know, because it was a very small gun. I thought, this is some kind of joke, some kind of blank gun. You know what a blank gun is? They have some sound, like when they use it at the race. On your mark, get set. They shoot the gun and then the runners go. That's a blank gun. So I was thinking, maybe it's a blank gun. But then I felt something, and I pulled my shirt down, and there's some blood coming. I had been shot. But you know what? I didn't think of Krishna. I thought, "That man just shot me! He shot me! He shot me!" I was thinking like this. And the man put his gun away and he turned and he started going down the street. And then a policewoman came from around the corner with big gun, very big gun. Apparently she had been contacted. And she told to the man, "Drop your weapon!" And the man threw his gun down and they took him to jail and they took me to the hospital. That was a near-death experience, but I didn't think of Krishna. After that, I thought, my goodness, I better become serious. There it was, I could have died just like that. And I didn't think of Krishna. So, we have to realize that death can come at any minute, any second. And unless we take shelter of Krishna, boom, into another material body. Into the womb of some mother, somewhere. So we don't want to be stuck in this cycle of birth and death. We want to take shelter of Krishna. And how do we do that? By chanting loudly, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is the process. It's such a very, very simple process. And if we become practiced at it, then we will be able to remember Krishna all the time. I was just talking to my friend Chandrasekhar Prabhu. He does the prison ministry. He preaches to the inmates in the prisons. And he said he used to travel with Vishnu John Swami. And he was glorifying Vishnu John Swami. So when we are reading this verse about how one is dreaming and deep sleep. But if one is actually Krishna conscious, then even in the dreaming state, one is Krishna conscious. So he was saying that Vishnu John Swami used to preach in his sleep. He said he walked into the room and Vishnu John was sleeping. He goes, Jai Prabhupada. Yes, Jai Prabhupada. You're not the body. He was preaching. He said that he gave a whole lecture while he was asleep. So one is Krishna conscious. One is Krishna conscious all the time. Like sometimes also Prabhupada, I think it was he went to the dentist and they wanted to give him some medicine to make him go to sleep. And Prabhupada said, no, I don't need. I'll just chant Hare Krishna. So he actually induced like a state to where his body wasn't feeling, but he was chanting. So even when the soul, like it's explained that in a dream, the soul actually leaves the body. It's actually going outside of the body. I was asking about this near-death experience. Because it's a similar thing, that the body is lying there, but people who have had these near-death experiences, they'll be under some kind of anesthesia, and they'll be in its sleep, so the doctor can operate. And then, after the operation, the patient will say, I was watching you. I was watching you operate on my body. Really? But you were completely under. You were completely asleep. He says, no, I was like hovering in the room. I could see from up above. You were doing this. It's not possible. You couldn't possibly have seen. No, I did see. So, well, what happened? He says, well, you cut here and they put so many stitches there. And then one other doctor came into the room. His name was such and such. And then he left. He said, but you were asleep when he came in and left. How could you have possibly known? Because I saw him. I saw him come in. I saw him go out. And then sometimes the doctors are amazed. How is it possible that you could see these things? So sometimes the soul will leave the body. So when we're in a dream, Prabhupada explains that the soul leaves the body, but it's like tethered to the body, like with a string. Like sometimes you see these boys with a kite. You've seen the boys with the kite? I'm amazed. They're quite expert. The kite is flying this way, that, and they're pulling this way. So you see the kite, you don't see the string. You just see the kite moving here, there. But it has a long string. So when the boy is done playing, he winds it in, he pulls the kite back down. It's attached by this string. So similarly, the soul is attached to the body. So we're attached, and sometimes the soul, subtle body, goes out. And also at the time of death, the soul remains within the subtle body, but that subtle body travels to another gross body. So this attachment is there. But the only way to really become free from that attachment, both gross and subtle, is to take shelter of Krishna and surrender to Krishna through devotional service. Prahlad Maharaj explains that bhakti yoga is the key, this process of devotional service, hearing and chanting, remembering Krishna, serving Krishna. This is a practical process that we can all undergo. We can all take part in this. It's not something esoteric in some book that you just read and try to realize. Actually, quite the contrary. Prahlad Maharaj, Prabhupada explains that no matter how scholarly you are, no matter how intelligent you are, unless you take shelter of Krishna, you won't be able to understand these subject matters. But when we take shelter of Krishna and engage in the service of Krishna, then these things are revealed. Or as it's stated, one who takes shelter of the Supreme Lord and the spiritual master, all the Vedic literatures are revealed. So, in order to see in the daytime, we need the sun. In the darkness, we can't see. We can't even see our own hand in front of our face. We're covered by darkness. But when the sun rises, then everything becomes apparent. We can see things clearly as they are. So this knowledge which is given to us by the spiritual master is said to be like the torchlight of knowledge. He's lighting up everything as the sun lights up the world in the daytime. We are able to see properly things as they are. And when we see things in the proper perspective and act accordingly, then the soul becomes free from this cycle of birth and death. And when we leave this body, because we're practicing this on a practical level, every day, day in, day out, month after month, year after year, decade after decade, and sometimes even lifetime after lifetime, if that's what it takes. But we keep pursuing the goal to love Krishna. That's actually the goal, to have 100% love of Krishna. And always remain so grateful for the opportunity that we have been given by the acharyas, by all the devotees, and in this way make our human life successful and go back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. We have time for one or two questions. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you for the wonderful class and your realization and near-death experience. Thank you very much. Now, you said that human form is very rare. One can see millions of humans living on the streets. They are not in a position to understand and they are literally starving. And we don't approach them. And what is the use of that human body? Don't you think it's a waste of life?
So you're saying there's millions of human bodies?
Human body is wasted, no? It's very rare, but they are wasted. And we don't approach there also. Approach to these people.
Yes, we should approach them.
And it is our job also to approach, no? We fight for our prasadam.
Yes, we need to do this. This is our mission. Yes, so many living entities. I said this.
What is to be done?
I was saying that there's so many living entities and so few human beings. But when you're in India, it doesn't seem like that. It seems like there's more human beings than anything else. In America, you don't even see the people. I live in a house. I get into my car. I open the garage door. I drive out. I go to a mall. I get out of the car. I go into the store. I come back and I go into my car. I go into, drive down my street. I open the garage door. I drive into the house. I close the garage door. You don't even go on the street. There's no need to even enter onto the street. And everyone there is like that. So you walk out the door and there's nobody there. There's very few people, you know, if you go downtown, okay, but just where I live, there's very few people. And you're thinking, well, there's hardly any human beings here. And when you come to India, everywhere you go, there's thousands and thousands of human beings. But still, compared to the 8 million different species of life, a human being is rare. They say that to take a human birth is like a turtle in the ocean coming up for air and sticking its nose through a knot hole in a piece of wood. You understand? There's a piece of wood floating in the ocean. And a tortoise, he comes up and he gets some air and he sticks his nose right through that hole in the piece of wood. It's like, never going to happen. It's never going to happen. But okay, it happened. You got a human birth. It's so very, very rare. We don't realize. Prabhupada, since time immemorial, we cannot even trace out how many lifetimes we have been in this material world. And not only as human beings. Sometimes we're dog body, sometimes cat body, sometimes plant body, sometimes fish body, sometimes bird body. Just think, I mean, sometimes I watch the birds, they're flying. And I'm thinking, oh, that looks very nice. I like, but be careful. You think like that? Next life, maybe you become a bird. So try to realize how fortunate we are to have this human body, to have this beautiful temple, to have the association of the devotees. Please take advantage of this and don't be a miser. Spread your good fortune. Tell everyone you meet. Huh? Everywhere you go and everyone you meet, you tell them about Krishna. So we're not big devotees. We can do our little part. But we do the best we can. Narottam Das last night, he says, you do the best you can in devotional service and try to help all those people. Hare Krishna. Okay, I think we can end here. Thank you all very, very much. Oh, we have time for a short question? Okay. You give her the mic, please.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. You mentioned about the gross body and the subtle body. You said when the soul leaves the body, it goes with the subtle body. And then it moves to the next gross body. So the question is, you also mentioned that we must try to get free from the subtle body as well. And even, I suppose this is true for Krishna conscious people as well. They also go with the subtle body. So how? What is the process? What's the guidance for getting, what do you mean by freedom from subtle body as well?
Well, that's very long subject matter, but very, very short subject matter also. Long answer, read all of Prabhupada's books. This is the key. If you really want to know the answer to this question, you read the books of Srila Prabhupada. But basically, the short answer is, chant Hare Krishna and be happy.
Hare Krishna.
I think we have to take a break now. But thank you all once again. Hare Krishna.